tell you, I love walking in New York City, especially in the morning. You know, you get your cup of coffee, your cup of tea, strolling across Midtown right here to the studios at PRN in Midtown. But today we actually had even a more special feeling to it because it's Fashion Week, ladies and gentlemen, in New York City. And this visually impaired guy does his best to find all these beautiful girls walking around. As a matter of fact, one found her way into the studio already. We're going to meet this incredible guest in a few minutes. And her life is spectacular on many levels. So right now, she's a sculptor, artist, and a museum educator at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City, of course, a world-renowned facility and institution. But in 2010, when she was 21, my God, such a kid, her life changed dramatically. She was hit by an 18-wheeler. While riding her bike to her studio here in New York City, she sustained lots of injuries, traumatic brain injury, multiple fractures, skull, leg, pelvis, you name it. Her heart, yes, her heart, stopped beating for nearly 1 minute. Doctors asked Emily's mother about donating her organs soon after that. Can you believe that? Going to her parents and saying, listen, we don't think she's going to make it. Well, she's back with a vengeance. Emily, yay! Gassio is here, and we're going to meet her in a few minutes. And we have a great show. Incredible. Oh, by the way, this is the radio show called Insight. My name is Mark Farrell. I'm so excited. I didn't even give you the nuts and bolts that I'm supposed to say. Gary Null is going to come over here with a big hammer and clock me in the head. My name is Mark Farrell. Thank you so much for listening today and every Thursday. We love broadcasting here. And also, we are in for a real treat. Let's hear that Olympic music because the Olympics are not over in any stretch of the imagination. It's called the Paralympics. And this is what I look forward to every year, or I should say every time the Olympics are here and upon us. And I am glued to the television each and every night the Paralympics are on. So I want to let you know that the opening ceremonies were last night. And if you want to watch this, it's not going to be on your regular Channel 4. You have to go on NBCSN, which I believe is a sports network. And so last night was the opening ceremonies. Today's Thursday, of course. It's on from 2:30 until 6 p.m. And I believe these are all Eastern Standard Time. Friday, September 9th from 1 to 5. And the whole schedule is online. But I want you to check that out and make sure that you check out these incredible, incredible, indomitable athletes. So coming to us live from Rio de Janeiro, 7-time Paralympian medalist, motivational speaker, a damn good person, a friend of mine and a friend of the show, Muffy Davis. How are you, Muffy?
Hey, Mark, I'm great. How are you?
Oh, envious, very envious. How was it last night?
I'm sitting here on top of a hotel. Oh, it was amazing. They did such a fantastic job. You know, all the buildup and everyone worried and wondering what was going to happen. And then they just, you know, blew it out of the park. It was an amazing opening ceremony. Stadium was packed.
78,000 people.
Yeah.
I wish it was 78,001 so I could have witnessed it. But anyway, tell me about the great audible gasp that came from these 78,000 people when the Paralympic ceremonies opened with an extreme wheelchairist.
Oh, yeah. It was pretty amazing. It was quite a spectacular feat. I mean, we had, like, the U.S. kind of stole the opening ceremonies between Aaron Frothingham, Aaron Wheels, and then Amy Purdy doing a dance with a, she did a kind of a tango-ish, I don't know, was samba with a machine, a robot. But yeah, we had some amazing, it was fantastic. And then the lighting of the cauldron was spectacular. Torrential downpour didn't stop anyone. It started just pouring almost right before the torch came in, but everything kept going crazy. You know, they like to celebrate down here, so.
Yeah.
It didn't stop.
And so do you. You're a crazy girl. You like to dance. Wheelchair or not, I've seen you cut
fun.
The rug, girl. You love it. So
it
you know what
was
great,
I'm
though?
I'm getting a little mellower.
Oh, well, you know, that kids do that to you, right?
Yeah, they do.
But in your heart, you're always a Paralympic medalist, 7-time, and it was great to meet you many, many years ago, and great to include you as a friend. But I have to paint a picture because when the ceremonies opened, Aaron Wheels Forthingham, I believe his name, extreme wheelchair performer, came down a ramp 6 stories high and went through a ring. and a giant ring. So I cannot believe how, what an incredible, exceptional start to what are going to be 8 or 9 days of just spectacular sportsmanship.
It is. It's going to be, I know, we've taken it to a whole new limit. You know, again, it said many times during the opening ceremonies yesterday, nothing is impossible. And I think they proved that in the opening ceremonies and through all this competition. It's just going to be, records are going to be blown and people's minds are going to be just shattered with what's possible. And there are no limits.
And, of course, I'd be remiss in just mentioning, of course, we always keep it positive. But the reality is that Russia is still pissed off because there was a lot of Russian protests going on because, obviously, the banned absence of Russian athletes due to drug use from the Olympics and Paralympics, which is understandable. But was it a palpable damper or was it just something that happened and moved on?
I think here, you know, yeah, there was not really a whole lot of energy put onto that. I think we've moved on. But, you know, I have to, personally, I want to commend the IPC as an athlete that has never doped, and it was always my biggest fear, you know, and wanting to be clean and healthy. And I think the only way we're ever going to get rid of doping is if we have a zero tolerance. And I feel for the clean Russian athletes. I have friends who aren't able to compete, and it is terrible. But when it's sanctioned by your government and they're doing stuff to cheat to win, it's not okay, and I really applaud the IPC for having the guts to stand up and do what the IOC actually didn't have the guts to do. So hats off to them. We have to have a zero-tolerance policy if we're ever going to get rid of doping in sport.
Muffy Davis is calling the Progressive Radio Network live from Rio at the Paralympics. Muffy is a 7-time Paralympic medalist. Muffy, what about some predictions? Some of the athletes, of course, you know well. Any predictions on any of the athletes in terms of any of the wide range of sports that are included?
Oh, my gosh. I don't want to do predictions because, you know, it's
okay,
the Olympic Games. Anything can happen.
Who should we look out for?
So this is the debut of Para Triathlon, and that's going to be really exciting and interesting. And we have some great athletes in. And so that will be the women's, I don't even know what their class is called, but the amputees, upright women's class. There's so many different classifications, but in Melissa Stockwell's racing, we have the top 3 women in the world here competing, so it could be a sweep in that. Our cycling team is amazingly strong. My old teammates, I'm excited. Allison Jones was the flag bearer last night, and she and I were teammates in alpine skiing and cycling, so it was really great to see
and
her.
She was on the show. Sorry to cut you off, Muffy, but she was on the show last week, and Will Lockenauer was on the show a couple weeks before that.
Perfect. Yep. Though 2 great athletes to watch. Definitely medal contenders. Will, this is his first games, and he is, talk about tough. His class is probably the toughest class. That and the men's tandem and C5, those are some 2-3 really tough cycling classes, but we've got some great athletes that will be there. And just the U.S. is a strong team. We know that. We've got amazing athletes. And we'll be great. We have terrific swimmers, you know, Jessica Long, Brad Snyder, again, you know, multiple medalists already and coming back for another game. So I'm excited. Today's just a bunch of preliminary heats and preliminary matches, and we're going to go see men versus Brazil, USA versus Brazil men's wheelchair basketball. We're heading out to see right after this. So, and I'm sure that will be a rowdy, loud match.
You can count on that. So, Muffy, what are you going to do in your downtime? There's not much downtime, but when there is, are you going to recover or are you going to go out and party it up?
Oh, I'm too old to party it up.
Oh, my God, you're so much younger than me.
Rooftop.
Who are you kidding?
Rob, I'm sitting on a rooftop right now looking at the Copacabana Beach, and for me, that's my take it back in and recover and enjoy. And we're just gonna have fun. My husband and I are both here. It's just we're really excited and honored to be able to represent Team USA and cheer them on and see how many medals we can bring back to the state.
Fantastic. Well, do us a favor. We want to have you back on the show, and also send us a picture from the rooftop so we can see what the famed Copacabana Beach looks like from afar.
I will. I will definitely. I just took one, and we will get you some photos. And let me know. I can give an update in a few more days and let you know how team's faring.
Yes, and keep those photos actually coming of any athletes, any competitions, because we'll post them up on the PRN website so the world can see and hear and share any exuberance, because obviously we're very happy. And we discuss about this very lightly, but the coverage this year of the Paralympics is more extensive than historically.
It is. It's finally, I honestly think for the U.S. it's kind of our tipping point. People can finally see what this is really all about. You know, London did an amazing job, Channel 4, and they kind of set a new standard for coverage. And hopefully NBC, hopefully people tune in, NBC Sports Network, and watch. There's going to be some great coverage. You can also watch it on Team USA. They have some live streaming stuff. So if you can't, you don't have Sports Network or you can't get to it, you can go to Team USA and then click on Paralympics Live and then click on what sport you want to watch. And there's a bunch of coverage there you can just watch streaming.
Outstanding. That's TeamUSA.com, I imagine, right?
Yep.
Muffy Davis, you're the best. Have an outstanding time. Tell your husband I said hello, and we look forward to more updates.
Thanks a ton, Mark. You take care, and I'll send you some photos from the beach.
All right. Bye-bye, Muffy.
Bye. Thank you.
Everybody should have a Muffy in her life, don't you think, Emily?
In my life.
But you have a Mark in your life. That's far from a Muffy, but you know, we're going to have to make do with that right now, right? So my guest who's joining me right now, who's been in the studio for the last few minutes, who has an incredible woman's best friend right at her feet named London, Emily Gassio is my guest. She's a sculptor, a museum educator at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And she had an additional hurdle in life. At 6 months old, she had a lot of hearing issues, ear infections, etc. Kindergarten, she was equipped with hearing aids, etc. And her life, for the most part, of course, she was fiercely independent. She wanted to leave her parents and go to art school. From New Orleans, go down to art school in Florida. She's done so many things because she's so driven by art. Do not stand in her way, because she loves to create and produce. And whether it's a 18-wheeler that hit her by accident in 2010 or not, she was going to follow her dream. Emily, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
If you can come a little bit closer to that microphone, that'd be great. Actually, just take that and pull it towards you.
Okay. Oh, yeah. This is better.
Don't be shy. We're informal around here.
Mm-hmm.
What a pleasure it is to meet you on so many different levels. And I can blame you for having minimal sleep last night, because I could not stop reading about you, Emily.
I must have been channeling your energy, because I also had trouble sleeping last night. I was really excited.
Oh, really? Actually, yeah. I didn't have any trouble sleeping. I just couldn't stop reading and listening about you. It's just great. And then we're going to talk about, I'm not going to say you're inspiring, because I know you don't really care for that. But hell, I'm going to say it. You're incredibly inspiring. So be mad at me.
Thank you. Well, that's a compliment coming from you, for sure.
Thank you very much. So tell me about your life prior to the accident. You were enamored with a gentleman named...
Alan.
Alan.
Yes, that's right.
And you were dating him for about 9 months, cohabitating.
That's right.
Life was going so well. What were you doing professionally?
Well, I was actually taking the semester off from Cooper. I was in my senior year in art school, and I was just taking the semester off because I had just gone through a cochlear implant surgery in my left ear, and I wanted to take some time off from school to kind of recuperate and, you know, get a sense of this new way of hearing. And so during that time I was taking off, I started interning for an artist whose name is Daniel Arsham. And that's when I had my accident, I guess back in October 2010, you know, just like a month after working for him. But we're all still really good friends. It's been an amazing journey, to say the least.
And it sounds like that day started out like any typical beautiful October fall day. You're walking out and your boyfriend put your helmet on, your bicycle helmet, strapped it on. You threw one leg over, he gave you a kiss, and off you went, and off you went to the subway. And
that's all I remember from that day. Yeah, I remember, you know, beautiful blue sky, little few puffs of clouds. Alan was taking the garbage out, and I was getting on my bike, you know, and like, I don't remember anything else after that. It's just,
So apparently Alan got a phone call about 6 hours later from a police officer saying that, you weren't dead, but you were not in good shape. So get over to Bellevue ASAP.
Yes, that's right. He, I guess, like, had a hard time getting into my hospital room, because apparently nobody knew nobody had my name. No one knew, like, the cops or the police, nobody had my identification. So when Alan got to Bellevue, he kept asking, like, for Emily Gossio, where is she? Can you take me to her hospital room? And, like, so for hours, like, he had no idea what happened to me. No one could tell him.
How did they contact Alan if they didn't know who you were?
So the cops had my bag, they had my purse, and they had... So the cops actually, they contacted my boss, Daniel, before... No, okay, let me go back. So what actually happened, okay, was Daniel called my phone, and the cops answered and said, we've been trying to...
I see.
You know, reach people, I guess. Like, we didn't know who to call.
Sure.
And so he said, call Alan, you know. And so that's when the cops finally called Alan, I guess, like, maybe around 1 or 2 o'clock. And then Alan rushed to the hospital, couldn't find me. And, you know, no one in the hospital knew who I was either. But they had brought him in, I guess, later, I guess at night, like around 8 or 9 o'clock at night, finally. And they had registered me as Big Trauma Big Bear. That was my hospital nickname.
That's got to be your screen name in some account that you have somewhere in this world. That's great. I love it. And then the parents' worst nightmare, your mom fielded the call that you had been in a tragic accident. And apparently she just took a deep breath and put it very frankly out to Alan, who she met a few months before, is my daughter dead?
Mm-hmm.
No, she's not.
Mm-hmm.
And so she got on a plane, and your mom and your dad were there six hours later or so. And then for the next couple hours, a day or two, they did not think you were going to pull through. As a matter of fact, apparently, from what I've learned, you weighed about 100-ish pounds,
mm-hmm.
but you were so bloated because you were swollen so much that you were way over 100, and they actually took your intestines out.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very visual conversation. Didn't think we were going there. Took your intestines out, put them on your belly so they could obviously be functional.
Yeah, that was the most, embarrassing part. Like, oh, there's my intestines out on top of my belly for everyone to see.
Well, I mean, that's how many people probably experiencing that in their life? Maybe, I don't know, a handful in this world? I mean, it's pretty unique.
Yeah, luckily I wasn't conscious at all during any of that. Like, I was slipping in and out of consciousness for, I guess, like, maybe 4 weeks after I had my accident, you know. Or it wasn't until 4 weeks after I was in the hospital that I started regaining my consciousness. You know, the doctors started weaning me off the painkillers and the heavy-duty drugs that... I still had no idea what had happened to me. I was just in a kind of like in a drug-induced coma, you know?
Meanwhile, Alan and your mom and dad were there in shifts 24-7, mm-hmm. would not leave your bedside, and gave each other reports. And the very, very awkward conversation, I believe, that happened with a resident or the nurse to your mom, I believe, about possibly donating your organs.
Mm-hmm.
And your mom, I believe, was on board for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then later that night, 3 o'clock in the morning-ish, Alan was on duty, your boyfriend,
mm-hmm.
of 9 months or so.
Mm-hmm.
Very endearing and loving, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
He had read something, I believe, a few weeks before about Helen Keller, how she was able to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
And he figured, what the heck?
Mm-hmm.
You have nothing to lose. And started to palm write. Is that the correct phrase, palm write?
I guess.
Something like that. So you're writing in someone's palm letters. And all of a sudden, there was a response because he wrote in your palm, I, space and time, love you.
Mm-hmm.
And now you didn't know who this was, but then you verbally responded.
I said, thank you. I love you too. That's what I said. And I had no idea who it was, but, you know, during that time when I was in and out of consciousness, I felt like I could kind of feel that sweetness, that love and affection coming from a few of the people in the room, and so I didn't feel, you know, scared. I felt really safe and protected, you know what I mean?
Did you feel that you were in a room locked in there somewhere and you could sense what was happening to a degree, but you weren't sure if it was a dream or reality?
Yeah, yeah. It was, I felt like, well, honestly, I would have dreams every night, I guess. And I just thought that every time I opened my eyes, that the room was just, you know, completely dark and it was still nighttime, and that I was just always waiting for that light to come in through the window. And so every time I woke up, I said, oh, it's still nighttime, I should keep sleeping. And then I would wake up and go to work, you know, go to my bike and go off to work like any other day. And so it wasn't until, I guess, when Alan started writing in my palm, that first time he said, I love you, and I responded to him, he started asking me questions like, what is your name? What year is it? Who's the president of the United States? And after that, I, you know, wanted to just like have a conversation. I was curious about who he was. So, you know, I put my hand out on the bed like this, like flat out, like asking him to write something in my hand. Or I would ask him a question like, what's your name? And he wrote Alan. And I said, oh, my boyfriend's name is Alan. You know?
He must have been crestfallen. But at the same time, elated because there's communication.
Yeah.
Now, when this happened at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, I believe he dialed your mom's number and said, you got to get over here quickly. Mm-hmm. And I must have been doing the jig, you know, when this happened. And apparently this was shown to doctors. Actually, I take that a step back. You had some flailing going on. When someone was asking a question, or your mom was reading something that you had shared together years before, you reacted to something, and they kind of chalked it up to, well, it's the body's reaction, and it can't be really pinpointed and/or accounted that she's actually having cognitive fluency. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's actually a phrase, but I just made it up. I like it. Cognitive fluency. Sounds good. There's no initials after my name for a reason. Anyway, but it's just amazing because here we are maybe a couple hours or a day before that they're talking about donating your organs. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, also when you're coming in and out of this state of consciousness but feeling locked, you couldn't hear anything because you would not allow anyone to put your hearing aids in because you were flailing. And I'm sure you just didn't know what that was about and you were scared.
Well, yeah, I didn't want to put the hearing aids in because I think what was going on was I was still recovering. My brain was still recovering from all the trauma. And I had no idea what was going on, and I just didn't want to wear the hearing aids. So my dad attempted to put them in a couple of times, and once he put them in and he said, Emily, can you hear me? And I said, no. And I took the hearing aids out and I said, I'm so tired, you know, I just want to sleep. So I think that a lot of it was like, you know, my brain couldn't make sense of what was going on, and it was all really confusing. So.
And your mom was not unscathed on many fronts because she got actually some bruises and some knocks and some bings because you were, when she was trying to put the hearing aids in, that she obviously was the punching bag because you said no, you didn't want them in. Mm-hmm. But once you started communicating with Alan, who you didn't realize was the same Alan that you were in love with, things started to change. And finally, I think he asked at one point, may I put them in?
Yeah.
And then once that happened, tell me about the voice recognition. What clicked?
So he put the hearing aids in and he said, Emily, it's Alan. And I immediately recognized his voice and I said, Alan, you know, like I don't know what was going on before that, like what I was thinking before I heard his voice, like who he was, because I actually even asked him if I could feel his face, you know, before he put the hearing aids in, before I knew he was Alan. I felt his face and I said, oh, you know, you even look like my boyfriend. So nothing was like coming together because I had thought so much time had passed since, you know, that day of my accident and where I was then, that Alan couldn't have possibly, you know, been in the hospital. He would have been at school, like, you know, life goes on, you know? And so that's just what the idea I had in my mind. But when I realized he was there with me the whole time, it was just, incredible. And so Alan said, "Your mom is here too." And I heard her voice and I said, "Mom," you know, is just an amazing experience, feeling that much love and care that I didn't think was even possible, you know.
Emily Gassio is my guest. She's an incredible person. She came back from a very, very extreme accident in 2010. And she's my guest today. And she's quite successful as an artist, and we're going to hear how her art form has changed, but yet the core of an artist never changes, and her position at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight. It's about 11:30 Eastern Standard Time in New York City on a beautiful day, and I'd like to ask you, when you opened your eyes and you started to communicate, did you feel like that whole void had been broken and severed, and you felt like, even though things may not have made total sense, but did you feel like, wow, I'm back?
Yeah, I did. I had no idea what had happened to me, and I actually didn't know I was blind when Alan was communicating with me. I just didn't think that anything like that could ever happen to anybody. So I asked Alan. Well, Alan asked me when he was writing in my palm. He said, "Where are you?" You know, I had no idea. I couldn't answer that question. So I asked him, "Where am I?" He said, "You're in the hospital." And I said, "What happened?" And he said, "Bike, truck." And then, you know, at that moment, I realized, like, oh, my God. You know, it's just unlike...
You're able to put those two together.
Yeah, I put those two together, and it's just... wow, this actually happened to me, and I actually survived, you know? That was before I knew I was blind, and if you listen to the Radiolab story, I started feeling like I was trapped, and I was stuck behind a wall, you know, that everyone else could see me, but I couldn't see them for some reason. I thought it was some kind of trick, like, Alan, I kept asking him to break down the wall, you know, to, like, let the light in, turn on the lights, do something. And he wrote in my hand, like, "I'm sorry, I can't," you know, and he started crying on my shoulder. I felt him crying, and I said, "Don't worry, I'll be okay." You know, like, I was comforting him when I was the one who should have been really upset. I was the one who was really upset.
Well, that's just in your nature.
Yeah. Yeah.
Has there been a time where we're almost at the 6-month anniversary? Sorry, 6-year anniversary coming up in October. Uh-huh. Have you gone back to the scene of the accident and/or has anything come back to you in terms of remembering what happened?
No, nothing at all.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah, yeah, it is. I mean, I remember pretty much everything. Like, I remember the night before, I remember the week, I remember the day, you know, like, minutes before the accident happened. But just, like, I have no visual memory of the truck whatsoever. I know what street I was on, you know, which crossing I was at, and... You know, I happened to be there a couple months ago because my friend has a studio on that same corner, and I didn't know. I was going with some of my friends in a taxi, and I didn't know where his studio was till I got there. I said, "Oh wow, I haven't been here in a really long time." You know, it's just I didn't want to tell them, but I felt like I never wanted to be there again. You know?
Were you filled with dread?
Yeah, I did. I felt a dread like there was something really wrong with that corner.
Did you feel almost ill?
I felt kind of like heavy. you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
So the doctors were coming in, the ophthalmology department, sounds like a team of them were coming in, checking your pupils and seeing no reaction. So your mom and Alan probably knew that something was going on with your vision. Obviously, they knew your hearing impairment, but obviously because you didn't have your hearing aids in. But when you did open your eyes and they were obviously made aware that you were going to see, mm-hmm. at first were they surmising that they were detached retinas? Or they realized it was the
No. I think when they looked at my CT scans, they saw right away my left optic nerve had been severed because of my bones crushing in my face. So they knew that about my left eye, but the right eye was a little more questionable because of my cochlear implant. For some reason, every time they tried to look at that right eye or that right side of my brain or whatever, it's just like a huge glare of light flashed out, you know, where my cochlear was.
So they were thinking maybe there's some electrical activity, which is a good sign.
Well, maybe.
Possibly.
I'm not really sure. I think maybe what happened was that the pressure in my brain that day of the accident, the optic nerve had atrophied, you know, because of all the pressure, the blood wasn't flowing through the nerves.
And with your other eye, they can't do surgery when it's connected to the optic nerve because the optic nerve is connected to your brain, and obviously you don't want to go there.
Mm-mm.
No. So, you know, you were back, the new version of Emily, you know, which is a great thing. Everyone is elated. I imagine you were happy to be alive, but tell me about your mental state in terms of, you know, a few weeks ago I was hearing impaired before the accident. Now I'm hearing impaired and blind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I go back and forth saying to myself, like, wow, I really wish I wasn't hearing impaired, because if I wasn't hearing impaired, maybe traveling, being blind would be a lot easier. But then I go back and I say, oh, gosh, I wish I wasn't blind. You know, like having both, like, wait a second, I was hearing impaired first and now I'm blind. But all of a sudden, I wish I wasn't hearing impaired, and being blind is like maybe less than, not as bad as either. I don't know. It's I'm okay with who I am. You know, I'm not really depressed. I haven't gone through any sort of depression or, you know, I hate feeling sorry for myself. And
that's obvious.
Yeah. I love being alive, and I'm really thankful for being alive, and I really am thankful for everyone who has supported me, and I've gotten so much love and support and help, you know, that I think I really deserve to live, and, you know, happy to be here and want to give back any way I can.
And it seems like you are, and we'll be getting to that momentarily. But I believe initially, after you started rebounding, got out of the hospital, you realized that potentially your future and career and love, hobby, everything that represents you, Emily, as an artist, may have to be reconsidered, and possibly to go into culinary arts or massage therapy.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I was really scared of going back to Cooper Union, the art school.
Where you were going to school?
Yeah, and I mean, I knew what kind of artist I was. I knew what kind of work, you know, ethics I had. I was really, really hardworking, and I didn't think that I would be able to do that again, to work in the studio and make the same kind of art that I always made. I loved painting. Like, I think a couple months before the accident was when I really got into painting again, and I, you know, just didn't think that I could do it anymore. So I, Yeah, I struggled a lot with my identity, who I was, like, what am I going to do now, questioning myself. And so that's where I thought about going into massage therapy, culinary school, because I thought those were still really related to the arts, like, you use your hands in massage therapy, and I loved using my hands, and culinary arts is, I love food.
I can see the connection to all three of those.
Yeah.
But of course, when you return home, you realize, obviously, you need to be able to function independently. So then you decide to go to Blind Inc.
Yeah.
In Minneapolis, a school that teaches blind teenagers and adults how to live independently with Braille classes, computer classes, cooking classes, wink, wink. And and that's really how you got on the fast track to becoming the new version of Emily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was where everyone at Blind Inc., they knew I was an artist, and they knew that, I don't know, they saw that passion in me still. So one of my instructors, George Wurzel, who taught the industrial arts class in the basement, he had all these power tools and, you know, chainsaws and chisels and mallets.
My kind of guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And
but this was foreign to you because you had never dabbled in that area.
No, I've never worked with wood before. Never really wanted to or thought about it either.
Isn't it a beautiful experience?
Yeah, it was. It was George, I guess, kind of. Well, first I was a little frustrated working with wood because I wasn't used to that idea of sculpting something by subtracting, you know? Like, when you work with wood, you have to, you're always taking away something, like with a chisel and a mallet.
Versus adding,
and which I was always doing with paint and with paper mache. So George actually forced me, not really forced me, but sort of like tricked me, I guess, into collaborating with him on an art project. So
clever George.
Yeah, and he gave me a blank piece of wood that was about like the size of a 12 inches long and maybe 3 inches wide all around, and on one end of the piece of wood he had sculpted bird wings, and the bird wings were flying into this wall, which, you know, symbolize me.
Pretty symbolic.
Yeah. And then he said, take the rest of this blank piece of wood and, you know, sculpt something that you turned into after your accident. What do you think you are? You know, who are you? And so I worked on it for about a month, and what ended up coming out on the other side of the wood was a sharp dagger, like a knife. And it was a really beautiful, smooth, not like really sharp, but that pointed tip blade. And I guess, you know.
And what did that depict for you?
For me, that was a strong force of nature, you know.
And that's who you are.
Yeah.
Emily Gassio is my guest. My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight. Emily is a sculptor, artist, and museum educator at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. She had an accident back in 2010 that changed her life dramatically. She is doing quite well. And we're hearing about her comeback at the school called Blind Inc. in Minneapolis. How long after the accident were you there? About a year?
After
the accident?
Well, I was there from January to November.
But how long after the accident
Yeah, it was, so I had the accident 2010, and I enrolled in Blind Inc. in 2012.
Okay, great.
So 2 years.
So you had some time to adapt to who you are and navigating, obviously, food, environment in your apartment. Now, did you reside with Alan in that time, or did you move back home?
Yeah, I was in New York with my mom and Alan. We were all living in an apartment together in Stuytown. And I was living, I had to live close to the hospital because I was still going to physical therapy and occupational therapy. Mm-hmm. So that was really great. I was only like 10 blocks away from NYU Rusk.
Did you ever have a little voice in the back of your mind saying that, I don't know why Alan's staying with me and you don't blame him for leaving?
No.
No,
I never
that's great.
Felt that at all. I never felt that. He never felt that.
He seems like a very unique individual.
Yeah.
Not for that reason, for many reasons, from what I've read and heard about him. And mm-hmm. I commend him.
Mm-hmm.
And your mom. I mean, your mom is just incredible through and through.
Yes.
Like any parent.
Yes, my mom.
She's really put to the test. Boy, she shines.
Yeah, she gave me, I think, the most support. You know, she was always there for me. And I talk to her every day on the phone.
So do I.
You know, she's my best friend.
I mean, your mom. So now you're a blind ink and you're feeling like the woodworking thing. Oh, by the way, was your instructor blind or visually impaired?
Oh, yes, that's right. He was completely blind.
Wow. So that must have given you a lot of incentive.
Oh, yeah.
All right. This guy's making a bird with wings on a... I should really give this my wholehearted try to see if I could do something relevant or close to it, right?
Yeah.
So then, but that really wasn't... It was, you know, opening your eyes, so to speak, and allowing you to be somewhat creative, but it really wasn't floating your boat until one of your peers at Blind Ink told you about another class at another school. So at the end of your day at Blind Ink, that wasn't where you went to bed and like hung out and had some snacks in front of the radio or TV and hung out. You did something even more industrious. Tell us about that.
Yeah, after classes at Blind Ink, on every Monday night, I would go to the ceramics pottery house, the pottery studio, and I took hand-building classes in clay. And, you know, I had taken classes with ceramics and clay before in high school, and I really didn't like it.
Compared to the brush.
Yeah, compared painting. To the brush. Mm. And so one of my friends was like, oh, you know, there's this class, and I'm going to sign you up for it. And I'm like, wait a second. I didn't say yes to this.
But now this is going back to an art form that you mentioned before that you like because you're adding something versus taking it away.
Yeah, and that's why I ended up loving clay so much, because it felt so much to me like painting. I had so much freedom with the clay body. I can turn it into anything I wanted to, and
a little bit easier to manipulate quicker.
Yeah, manipulate quicker
versus wood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and with wood you have to use all kinds of tools, but with clay you just use your hands and you can feel everything. It's really tactile, and you can paint it too, color.
So during this time, the 2 years at Blind Ink, how did your perception of your life change from when you entered Blind Ink until when you left, in terms of about your life trajectory after that point?
Oh, so after that point,
Did you think, when going in, like, all right, I'm going to give this a whirl, but let's see, I'm not sure what I'm going to do the rest of my life. But then, obviously, with all this information and experience and skill set that you gained.
Yeah. I think when I first got into Blind Ink, I knew I had to go back to school somewhere, and I thought I would either go back to Cooper and just, you know, spend a year there and then graduate and do something else after that, or I would like figure out another school and like apply for a different degree, or, you know, culinary arts, massage therapy, anything like that, and just drop out of Cooper. But at the end of, you know, all those months that I spent with George and with my other peers at Blind Ink and at the ceramic class, I gained so much confidence in myself, like as a creative thinker and as a producer, that I started getting my own ideas again. And I said, yeah, I'm going to go to Cooper and I'm going to come back strong. You know, this is what I'm supposed to do.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Talk to me about how, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, Emily, but how more maybe connected you were with your art now? If it's a different type of art, especially woodworking mm-hmm. and pottery, which you had done years before. You didn't really have a affinity for it. Mm-hmm. But obviously, you were hearing impaired before the accident, but now you're blind. Was there much more of a connection now because it's all different sensory methods?
Yeah, it's all physical now. And I still, I can see, I can visualize things really clearly in my mind, and I have a clear idea of what I want something to look like, what color I want it to be, and the texture and the shape. And so I kind of compare what I see in my mind to what I'm feeling in front of me. And I also feel like, we haven't talked about this yet, but working at the Met, I feel definitely a stronger connection to the art there, because the way we work there, or the way art is described to me, the way I experience art, is someone at the Met will describe a painting or a sculpture to me, and I feel like I'm looking at it, when they describe it. I feel like I'm looking at every little square inch of that painting or sculpture that, unlike I've never seen before.
Well, in a sense, you are. And let's segue actually to a phone call you got from your mom mm-hmm. Regarding the New York City Lighthouse International here in New York City, which is a great, great facility that I've been a part of mm-hmm. that actually changed my life vastly, because at age 25, they gave me a pair of telescopic devices, which allowed me to drive a car for the very first time. They glasses that look like a surgeon or what your dentist would wear. So it dramatically and radically changed yours, because you went there and receive on a trial test, part of a trial test, a BrainPort Vision device, which looks like a really hip pair of James Bond glasses like mine. But there's a lead that goes from the bridge of the glasses, which has a camera, a very small camera, down to a small little piece of titanium, which is, I think, the size of the postage stamp-ish, maybe a little thicker. And then that gets placed on your tongue. Mm-hmm. You want to take it from there, Emily?
Yeah. It sounds like rocket science.
It is rocket science.
So the way it works is the camera that's attached to the bridge of the nose on the glasses will send electric signals to the tongue piece. And the tongue piece will draw on my tongue whatever the camera is seeing, like little shapes of light and shadow or outlines. And I would be able to translate that electrical shock that I feel on my tongue, that tactile information, and I would be able to see it in my brain.
Fantastic.
Like, see it in my mind's eye, basically.
You see, we all have a misconception that our eyes are what we see with, our ears are what we hear with, et cetera. But they are just the conduits mm-hmm. that create the transmission of these electrical impulses to our brains, and our brains are what decode everything.
Mm-hmm.
So this was an incredible, incredible revolution, invention, et cetera, that dramatically changed your life almost instantly, especially when the gentleman who was introducing you to this product kind of waved like a white wand, almost like a, mm-hmm. Almost like an umbrella, but white, and you mm-hmm. saw it, and you were like, wow, I can see this.
Yeah. Yeah, it was that moment right there was, I thought, oh my God, this thing is working. Because before I had all these expectations of what it would look like, and when I put it on, it just all looked like little bright lights, like shapes, weird shapes that I couldn't really recognize. But once the researcher's name was Ed, once he had waved that white rod in front of my face and threw white balls towards me, I was like, whoa, I can actually see that. And we even played a game where, you had three solo cups on the table
mm-hmm.
upside down, and there's one styrofoam ball underneath one of the three cups, and you move the cups around so you don't know which cup the
sure.
ball is underneath. I don't know what the name of that game is. But
sounds like a beer drinking game, but yeah, we get the analogy.
Every time he stopped, he asked me to pick which cup the ball was underneath, and every single time I got it right.
Incredible.
Just watching it with my eyes.
I get goosebumps just thinking about that. Was your mom present at this time?
Yeah, she was. Wow. She's like, "You're just guessing, Emily." I said, "No, I can see it."
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So at that point, you realize, I'm going to go put my brush back down to the paper. And you got these gigantic spotlights, and you focused on these pads. Up to that point, you were just doodling, and which was great because it was an outlet. It was a release for you. But now, with the ability of the BrainPort Vision device, a trial device, it was FDA approved, correct?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
That this could really open doors for you, because maybe this can obviously be very, very close or very similar or not too far from the world you were in before the fall of 2010 in your accident.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was like, I guess like the first time I heard about this device, the BrainPort, I immediately thought, oh my God, if I had this device, I could use it to paint and to draw again. That's exactly what I wanted to do with it. And when I went back home, that's what I did. I got a gigantic pad of paper and some black markers and some black ink, and I just sat down and I started drawing, which is exactly what I used to do before the accident. When I had vision, I always had my sketchbook with me, and I was always drawing my ideas for sculptures or my ideas for paintings before I actually started on the painting or the sculpture. It was kind of like my journal or my diary, you know.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And it wasn't too long after that that you received an award. Your piece was displayed at the Kennedy Center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was back in 2013. In October 2013, one of my favorite sculptures called Bird Sitting won an award at the Kennedy Center for a VSA. And I made that sculpture based off of a drawing that I did with the BrainPort of a bird sitting on a chair.
That's incredible. There's that bird again.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's funny. I think after George, you know, made me into that symbol.
That blind ink, yes.
It's just sort of stuck with me. I loved it.
Well, I think it was kind of thematic, you know, certainly. Emily Gassio, we only have a few more minutes. Please tell me about the most important role you have at the Metropolitan Museum of Art as a museum educator.
So I teach drawing classes there almost every month, and the drawing class is called Seeing Through Drawing. And I co-teach it with three other educators. And in the class, we have people who are sighted and people who are visually impaired or blind come in, and we all have like a drawing activity that we plan for the day, and we pair that idea of the drawing activity with one of the paintings or sculptures in the Met's collection, and we'll explore the painting through verbal description, which is where the educator will describe a painting in really good detail. And while the educator is describing, the person will draw from the description based on their description or based off their own inspiration, whatever they take from it. And every class is different. We always have a lot of fun. And
it sounds it, certainly.
Yeah.
How fulfilling is this role for you?
How's it feel?
How fulfilling?
Oh, I love it. Yeah, I thought like one of the things that I really wanted to do after I graduated from Cooper was to work at the Met. And so when I got my internship there, I was just floored. I was like, oh my God.
This is a dream come true for you.
Yeah, it's a dream come true.
Accident or not, this is where you wanted to land, right?
Yeah, so that was like my biggest dream come true.
And Emily, sorry to interrupt you. We're almost out of time, only a few more seconds, but tell me, you're still an artist and you love to be an artist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when you're not at the Met, you're creating.
Yeah, I still sculpt in my studio, and I share a studio with the artist Daniel Arsham, who I was interning for that, you know, during the accident. So Daniel and I are still really good friends.
Are you still doing any woodworking?
No, all clay. I gave up. I didn't really give up woodworking. It's just
I'm a woodworker.
Stick with me. Let's build
something together.
Okay, we can do that. You can take me to your shop.
Emily Gassio, it was such a sincere pleasure. I am so in awe of everything that you've done in your life.
Thank you.
I'm not going to say you're an inspiration. Oh, what the hell? You are an inspiration. All the best to you. And you have to come back soon because there's more to your life that we need to share with our listeners. My name is Mark Crowell. The show has been Insight. Missed this broadcast or any part of it, or you want to hear it again because Emily's such a fine voice to listen to, an incredible story, you should. Log on to PRN.FM, go into the archives section, and of course, all the shows are there. If you'd like me to speak at your school, college, organization, or more, check out MarkFarrellMotivation.com, MarkFarrellMotivation.com. Special thanks to Muffy Davis, calling in from Rio, 7-time Paralympian and motivational speaker. She's going to be checking in with us in the next few days as well. Make sure you watch the Paralympics. It's on NBCSN, a sports network. My name is Mark Farrell. Have a great day. Next Thursday, we'll be back large and living big in New York City.